Welcome to Querido Connects. I'm your host, Jen, and I've been conversing with friends around the world about life challenges and impactful moments. Conversations on this platform look at answering the questions, how we overcome challenges, and how our experiences shape who we are and the work we do today. I hope this work can inspire you on your own personal and individual journey. Let's dive right in. Hello, my guest today is Bali-based Esther Evers. Okay, and get ready for her certification list here. She is a past life and current life regression therapist, life between lives regression therapist, spiritual channel and Reiki master and teacher. Hi, Esther.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you actually, because it's very special. I invited her on this episode because she has had many amazing journeys. And over the summer, I worked with her on a few things personally for myself. I did her soul guidance, past life regression, as well as life between lives, spiritual regression therapy. And I took a lot out of all three sessions. I enjoyed my sessions so much that I gifted family members and friends sessions too over the summer. Especially members who I knew who were not interested in such fields, right? Like friends or families who were like, what is this? But I was like, I'm going to gift you a session. So just schedule a time with Esther and ask her any questions you want and see how that goes. And to my surprise, they all thoroughly enjoyed it. So I won't go into too many details as I want Esther to share them herself, but I wanted to point out that in today's conversation, we will be talking about how to unapologetically step into your light and create a life of passion, freedom, and spiritual healing. And just to set the tone for our audience today, Esther, again, like I said earlier, has had an incredible journey from being a professional actress to wildlife conservationist to a holistic therapist and the powerful transformative healing modalities. It's like, I'm tongue-tied here. She shares with the world that help you awaken to your truth, embrace your abundance and soul purpose. So without further ado, I'm going to let Esther jump in now, and we can basically start, you know, wherever you want. We can go as far back to your early childhood days.
Well, yes, all the way back to childhood. So when it comes to soul purpose, as you can imagine, I get that question from clients all the time, right? I would like to find my soul purpose or my life purpose. And in my experience, the ultimate life and soul purpose for all of us is to align with our soul essence. And that is a source. Our soul essence is a source of unconditional love and joy and abundance and empowerment. And from that space, once we are aligned with that, that allows us to channel that or to express that in many different ways, in multiple ways, depending on our individual passions and interests. And some of those are innate in us, born in us. And I will give you an example, as was my case, even though I didn't fully realize it at the time. And for others, which also has been my path, it is an exploration, you know, not as clear from the start. So I have a combination of things, and I'm very happy to share that. From the moment that I could walk, really, I would bring in anything from the street, whether that was, and it pertains to animals, whether that was the kitten of the neighbor, whether that was a mouse that I had found, often half dead, or a bird that had fallen out of the nest, and whether alive or not, I would bring it in and I would tell my mom that I could heal it. That passion for animals and that little healer already then ultimately took years and years and years to express itself, but it was already in me then. So I went on to become a professional actress. I'm a classically trained actress in Amsterdam. I'm originally from the Netherlands, yet I have lived in Asia and Africa for the last 22 years. So I left the Netherlands at quite a young age. And from the acting career, I ultimately felt that I lost my passion. And when you become an actress, and it's very different now when people associate that with being famous, but in my case, a classically trained actress was predominantly for stage acting. This was a passion, you know, there was barely any money to be made on stage. It was an art, and you dedicated your whole life to this, because it certainly wasn't an easy profession as any creative profession is. And I ultimately became so disillusioned with this field where you are as good as your last performance, you know, the constant rejection ultimately didn't really matter how good you were or what talent you had. And now we are a little bit more aware of that, but it also very much involved with how and with whom you connected. And to me, it just didn't resonate. It wasn't in integrity with whom I was. And so I needed a break. And my second passion had always been traveling. And so I had just done a series. So obviously I did do some television to pay the rent in Amsterdam. And in this case, I had a little bit more in my bank account and said, okay, I need a break. And I'm giving myself between 2 months and 2 years to travel the world and hopefully revive that passion of mine.
2 months and 2 years is a very big gap.
Yes, it is. I thought, okay, if I'm done after 2 months, I can return, keeping my head high, holding my head high, because I had a big farewell party. But ultimately, yeah, let's give myself up to 2 years to figure this out and see where life takes me.
How long did you do acting for? Because this was, you were classically trained, so you went through all your schooling, and then you professionally pursued this career for how long before you decided, okay, I'm going to go wanderlusting now?
So the acting academy itself was 4 years. That was a rigorous training. And ultimately, approximately 5 years, I was an actress in Amsterdam before I packed my bags. And I fell in love, snowed in the Himalayas in Nepal, and I never returned. So I then settled in Asia. I fell in love with an Englishman who was based in Hong Kong, and I had to make a choice between love or a career that I already was struggling with. And so I chose love. I followed my heart. And I think that is definitely an essential aspect of finding your soul purpose. Or connecting with that soul purpose that is, of course, already within you. As we said, you know, that soul essence where you find the courage to follow your heart, to follow your passions. And in this case, yeah, that was love for me. And so I settled in Hong Kong and had to give up my whole acting career, which was very tough, you know, because in my heart, I was still that actress. And I didn't really have anything to pursue creatively in Hong Kong because there was no English-speaking theater company based there. So that was, a struggle. To really find something that would light up my soul. Another important thing, right? When it comes to finding your life purpose, that you feel inspired, that it lights up your soul, that you feel joyful about what you do. Yeah.
So was it, I mean, you mentioned earlier you did it for love, right? And so you chose that and you moved out to Hong Kong. I don't want to stereotype, but, you know, usually in these circumstances, if it's this traveling spouse, which you became, sometimes career-wise, they don't necessarily do much, right? And then so you maybe end up taking care of the household and having kids and raising them. But it sounds like for you, or at least for you and your husband at the time, it was almost like, well, maybe you want to continue to pursue something for yourself. Was there at any point there where a family, you know, like having kids and doing the domestic housewife lifestyle was something you were thinking about? Or was it still kind of like, I really love this person, want to support his career, and I'm here, so I'm just going to carve out my niche and play the supporting role?
Well, I ended up very much in that supportive role because I couldn't connect with anything that I felt passionate about other than, and this is where the love for animals came back, volunteering for rescue organizations in Hong Kong. And I ultimately, they ended up calling me the crazy dog lady in Hong Kong. I like to think endearingly so, but I ended up rescuing many dogs. I ended up with a pack of rescue dogs myself, of six rescue dogs myself. So they saw me, you know, driving around in Hong Kong with six big heads sticking out of my little Barbie Jeep, as I called it at the time. And beyond that, beyond, you know, feeling that I really wanted to contribute to something beyond myself, it was hard to build that in a career, into a career, a new career. And ultimately, after about 8 years of, I did teach drama, you know, for those years, but it just wasn't the same, of course, as being on stage yourself. And ultimately, yeah, I informed my husband that I needed something for myself other than supporting the family. And that took me to enroll. And that was a big step in a wildlife conservation management, lodge management and wildlife management course in South Africa. That love for animals, I wanted to turn that into a profession. And I ultimately saw myself or envisioned myself working for one of the greater conservation organizations in Asia, which was based in Hong Kong, of all places. I felt if I could get qualifications under my belt in a place where there is something to conserve. And ultimately, that was also the only place where it is qualification was offered. As you can imagine, it was quite a unique course. I have to go to Africa. And that course was a year, that training was a year long. And it was in many ways absolutely amazing, very challenging. As a prerequisite to the management aspects of it, I had to be a highly trained African ranger, safari guide. So I slept in the bush for 6 months and I was trained from everything, knowledge of the soil to the stars and everything in between. I mean, I can talk an hour about a dung beetle, let alone a lion or an elephant, right? So yeah, that was full on, you know, taxonomy of 100 different trees and their medicinal purposes. But I loved every moment of it because this was my environment. That little girl, you know, bringing home her animals, here she was in the big African wilderness, connecting with her cheetahs and her lions and her elephants. So everyone who came to visit me, family, friends, everyone came to Africa that year, they just felt that this was my place. But a harsh environment, because after my training, I ended up working in the Serengeti, very remote, for a year. And ultimately after that, because I really missed the conservation aspect of it, I ended up working for the Cheetah Conservation Fund in Namibia, doing what I thought I love, yet it also came with a cost, as it can be immensely lonely in the bush. And I still had a husband in Hong Kong at the time who couldn't join me because his career was in Hong Kong. So we juggled back and forth for about 1.5 years. And ultimately, I had to make a choice when my husband informed me that he needed a wife by his side, and that he could no longer do this, which was a major shock to me at that time, because I still loved him dearly. And as I said, it was ultimately all with a view of going back to Asia and work for a conservation organization there, but I needed to get some experience first. I needed to make a choice to either vanish into the bush and dedicate my life to saving whatever endangered species, and come out in 30 years a shriveled prune, as the African sun is harsh, and probably a little cuckoo, you know, because if you don't have any social connections and you're just living for the animals, you know, it does take a toll, or go back to civilization.
Right, right.
And at that time, predominantly focused on possibly saving my marriage. So I did. I chose that. I went back to Hong Kong, and unfortunately, I couldn't save my marriage, but that marked a major transition for me. Going through that divorce, going through the darkest nights of my soul, coming back to Hong Kong without anything. I was on the street. If it had not been for one of my dearest soul sisters who took me in, and literally losing everything overnight. My husband, my dogs, my stepdaughter. I was a stepmom for many years as well. My home, everything that I had identified with till then, lost in an instant. No job, no way of at that moment providing for myself. I literally came back to Hong Kong with my little suitcase and my safari clothes, and that was it. And many people fall apart, and understandably so, when they lose one of these things, when they lose their home or their job or their partner.
Right.
But in my case, everything needed to go, because if I would have lost one thing, of course, I would have probably fallen in a pretty dark hole, but that hand would have reached out, would have risen out of that hole pretty quickly, and I would have pulled myself out somehow. In this case, that hand needed to be chopped off as well.
I just wanted to kind of come back in a little bit and say, you know, obviously we're speaking about this experience in hindsight, right? But if you think back to that moment where you made that decision to say, hey, I'm coming back, I want to make this work, and you show up, and the next thing you know, it's like, kind of like, thanks for coming back, but no thanks, because this is really not working, you know, and that feeling of like, what just happened? You know, you left what you so love to do as a career path and so passionate about and really good at, to choose love and try to make that work. And suddenly it's like you lost it all, right? And how did you, like, I guess my question is, if you can recall, you know, that pain at the time and how, I mean, because now you have the tools, but you might not have had it then.
Absolutely.
In that transformation at that moment, you know, and I know a lot of people who will be listening to this episode can probably relate as well. You know, again, like you said, it doesn't necessarily have to be the broken marriage, you know, losing a home or getting into financial debt. There could be various reasons, right? Even death of a close family member, friend. But when you're at that rock pit bottom, or like you said, had to chop off your hand and really there's no climbing up, how do you climb back out?
Yeah, that's a great question. It at the time, when, you know, I had nothing to hold on to, absolutely nothing, it brought me to my knees for the very first time. I had always been a person that if I didn't like something in my life, well, then you change it, right? Or you take action to change it. In this case, there was no action to take at that moment. Yes, other than, of course, going into survival mode. But for the first time, I felt I was no longer in control of anything, because all of this happened beyond, well, what I could at that moment control or direct, if you will. And so that moment of sinking down on my knees for the very first time in my life, and I had encountered, you know, sadness and loss before, but not like this in any way. And I said, if there is anything out there, anything that is beyond what I can perceive, I was not a spiritual person at that time, at least not consciously. We're all spiritual, but I wasn't aware of it. I wasn't religious. I didn't believe in any source beyond myself, hence me being so self-reliable for the first time. Yeah, you can call it, I prayed. And I said, if there is anything out there to help me through this, then this is the time. This is the time to show up.
To show up,
because, yeah, I cannot do this alone. And I don't want to turn this into too traumatic of a moment, but at that time I was really at the end of my rope. Yeah, I was absolutely devastated, and I had no idea what life meant going forward. I didn't really know who I was anymore when I lost all my identity as a wife, as a conservationist, as everything, anything that my actress already, anything that I had hold on to for all those years. And look, it was a very, very traumatic evening, that particular moment that I recall, and very personal. But what I can say that I fell asleep, crawled up in fetus position, naked on the bathroom floor, crying my eyes out in complete and utter despair. And ultimately, I must have fallen asleep. And when I woke up, even though my circumstances had not yet changed, I was still homeless. I was still without any support other than, of course, those dear, dear friends, but no access to a bank account. Everything had been cut off. So all of that was still the same. But I woke up with such deep peace in my heart and a joy and a connection that I had never, ever felt in my life. I was able to be in the world, if you will, in my reality, but ultimately, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, I was in a different place. And I could observe things, but I wasn't able to fully participate. So all I would do from that moment, I floated, literally floated around, smiling. I barely felt the need to speak. People who had seen me in despair only a few days prior would see me and say, oh my God, Esther, what has happened to you? you've got this energy around you.
Yeah.
And I would just nod and smile. I couldn't explain it. I couldn't really participate in earthly conversations. And I just was in this beautiful self-contained space of ultimately what I understand now was my source essence, was my soul essence. I had become one at that moment with the divine, whatever you want to call that. It was absolutely amazing. It was expensive in ways. It was very comforting. It was loving. And none of the issues that had mattered before mattered at that moment.
This was like a very, very pivotal point for you. Very like that
major,
like that
major.
That night curled up on the bathroom floor. That was a very pivotal moment. And I mean, just listening, it almost sounds like, you know, I feel like people, including myself, would want to ask, but how do you get to that point? Right?
Well, yeah. And that's, once again, a really good question. Obviously, for me, through the truly the darkest night of my soul, Some parts of that night are, you know, very personal, and I will keep that to myself. But what I can say is that when I plead, when I begged for something to take over and show me that there was another way, because in all my years, obviously it had led to this. So I knew at that moment, I could not go on the way I had. And I was ready to step out if this was going to be my life. So when I pleaded for whatever was out there to take over and show me that there was a life beyond this, well, that is what I was gifted. And I can only say that for me to experience this, I had to go through the deepest pain that I had ever experienced. And even then, of course, I had no idea that I would come out this way, or that this would be the state that I would wake up in. Right. So it's not something that you necessarily can consciously direct.
Right.
It was where ultimately, you know, the divine took over, the universe took over, infinite intelligence, whatever you want to call it, my own divine essence said, okay, guys, this is the moment.
she did it. Now we got to show her the light.
Exactly. Yes. You know, and what it means to really, truly be embodied in whom she is at her essence, beyond all the stories and the drama that plays itself out on this, you know, earthbound plane. And so when you said, how do you get there? I find, of course, each of my clients' journeys are unique, but often people awaken, because that is what, with hindsight, I can call this a spiritual awakening. Of course, at the time, I had no idea what was going on. But now with, you know, the journey that I've been on since, it was a major spiritual awakening, where not just the relationship with myself changed, but also with how I saw the world, how I interacted with others. Everything changed. It was as if I was awakened from a long slumber where I had no idea as to the true nature of our beings, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And once I got a glimpse of that, and I needed to experience this firsthand, because if you would have told me, oh, this is who you really are, oh yeah, probably would have nodded and said, well, good for you, you know.
Yeah.
But right at that moment, I was such a down-to-earth kind of Dutch, you know, Dutch upbringing, kind of have to see it to believe it.
Okay.
No connection with any dogmatic religion, if you will.
Right.
And so, yeah, the universe literally shook me awake, and it had to come through the greatest pain. And that is still, for most of us, unfortunately, the case, that people have an awakening, an awareness. They transcend their current circumstances, whether that is a life-threatening disease, whether that is losing someone that you love dearly, or any other major trauma. It's often where people awaken to their true nature, but also what truly matters in life.
Right.
And so I floated around for quite a while, but then I had to function again, right?
Yeah,
and so I slowly came back more to an earth-based foundation, where I had to function. And I have to say, though, within that state, without any effort, I was offered. I didn't even have to go
you didn't seek for it. Like, you weren't
exactly
looking for these things, but when you were in that state, that energy, things came to you.
Things came to me. I literally manifested things instantaneously. I didn't have to go for interviews. I was offered 5 jobs that week. The first week, I found my home where I ended up living for another 6 years. Things literally, And so it gave me a glimpse of what is possible when we're fully aligned with our highest potential essence. We don't have to go out and make things happen. When we embrace and embody that vibration, things will come to us, because we were now, in my case, I was now an energetic match for those things to flow into my life effortlessly. So serving my highest good at the time. And it was truly a miraculous experience. And having, and of course, I wasn't able to, or not of course, some people might be able to maintain that for a prolonged period of time, especially when you go and live in an ashram or a cave and you don't have to concern yourself with earthbound matters. But of course, you know, earthbound challenges were still there, and they did, eventually I did have to address them, but I was able to engage them from a very different space and place. And I have revisited that space many times in my life, but that was the most prolonged and impactful experience
right.
I had. But once you know what you are and where you can be, you can no longer ignore.
Yeah, you can't ignore it. Once that door opens, you can't really shut it.
Exactly. You can no longer ignore how far you might trail off that alignment at times, right? Because you know where you can be. And so it's a beautiful reminder, if you will. You know, when I, of course, ever since I've had, you know, I've had moments where I got caught up, you know, with the trauma of life, but I would take a few deep breaths and sit back in meditation and just reconnect with that space in my heart where really all that matters, you know, is that inner foundation of that love and that worthiness. And the knowing that you are deserving of the very best, and that courage to take inspired action at the time, to embrace your truth, to be in your full expression. And that has served me tremendously. That's been my anchor since. Mm-hmm. And people can attain that through many different practices, right? Yeah.
Different channels.
Spiritual awakening is hard to control. there's no control in that, you know. You can ask for it, you can do your practices that allow you to grow towards that space, and for some people it might just be a gradual journey of, you know, evolution of awakening, which is the case for most of us. But for me, I needed that major
wake up call.
Wake up. Yeah, that major breaking free, if you will, from all the self-imposed confines that I wasn't even aware of at the time that kept me living
in your box, I guess. I guess that we can
not really
a box.
Yeah, people would have never guessed, because of course I traveled the world.
But in your world, in your definition, now that you see what's beyond that, it kind of is.
Yeah, I think it was a confine of being driven by your ego.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean, you know, that you are an egocentric person, right? I was a very loving person, but it is a perception that comes from an ego-based motivation of trying to control, mm-hmm. trying to potentially manipulate
the outcome.
Having fears of maybe not living up to certain expectations, whether that's societal, whether that is self-imposed, whether that comes from family pressure. That is all ego-based, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And once I transcended that, it allowed a freedom. And that's what I mean with breaking free. It allowed a freedom in truly embracing and embodying who you are at your essence. And that is stronger and more impactful than whatever fears you might have held on to, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Just knowing your truth when you're able to get there to that point, right? Oh my goodness. We could keep going on with this conversation. I feel like we have so many amazing stories to share with us, but we are coming down short on time. But there are a few things I still want to ask you before we, you know, wrap up here. But so one is, if you can share with us a little bit more about, once you kind of hit this awakening, how did you figure out, wow, this is kind of the path I'm going to take in terms of getting these different certifications? How did you figure out that there is such modalities? You know, how were you exposed to it? How did you manage to find your teachers and your gurus? How did you figure out, okay, well, this is how I'm going to manage my awakening self, my true self? And, you know, like you said earlier, and the term you used was earthly bound, right? Coming back to, you know, here in this human world that we live in, for those who are trying to understand our conversation, the human world and the spiritual world. So how did you try to find that balance and then build a career around that, right? And position yourself as a healer for those who, and I'm saying this more for those who might not understand this field so much, in terms of what is soul guidance? What kind of work do you do? What kind of healing is this? How is it different from seeing a therapist? So if you could, I don't know, in not too many words, kind of like quickly summarize, you know, like, yes, I had this awakening, and then I figured out, you know, I had so-and-so friends who introduced me to, you know, this therapist or, you know, this modality. And I was very interested and I got really deep into my training. And then I realized I can do this too, and I can heal people, and the benefits of working with a healer like yourself. And then I'll let you answer. Then I'll wrap up with my last question.
Okay. Okay. Now I'll try to keep it as concise as possible.
Okay.
But this is a big question.
I know. It's very important though. It's very important.
Yeah. Yes. After that awakening, it was a journey, right? I had had that experience, but I still was very lost because I didn't really know what my life was going to evolve into. But what I did know was that I wanted that connection, that inner connection going, that I wanted to embrace that sense of abundance and joy and excitement for living, which obviously I had lost throughout that process of the divorce. And so I signed up after only four classes to do my yoga teacher training. And that was another step on my journey, where I immersed myself in Eastern philosophy and learned about the chakras, our seven energy centers. Of course, we have many more, but those are the main ones, and the healing and how to direct certain energies through yoga, and the beautiful, beautiful sense of connection and bliss that it, you know, brought me when I was lying down in Shavasana and felt connected with everything around me. Ultimately, all motivated by supporting myself on my own healing journey. Eventually, this took me to India for another yoga qualification, which didn't turn out what I had expected, but what, and ultimately what I found out was the true purpose for my visit to India. And I've been there before, but this time, obviously, there was a different intention, different focus, was that I had signed up for a Reiki course, because I knew that I needed healing support in every possible way to remain as much as I could in that space that I had experienced so beautifully and so powerfully. And I had no idea what Reiki was. I knew it had something to do with energy and healing. And I signed up, and I met my Reiki master, who was in a German lady in her 70s in Rishikesh, India. And once I was, when she embraced me, because I was still at that moment, still going through some major grief. And once she embraced me, I just felt that I had come home. And rather skeptically, I went into this course still, even though I had my awakening, it didn't mean that I believed in everything else.
Right,
that was
right
out there that I couldn't necessarily comprehend. So I had to experience firsthand everything that I eventually brought to my clients. In this case, the Reiki was a next step on that healing journey. I had the most beautiful healing and loving experiences. And I felt so passionate about this that I decided to bring that to others who needed that. And that was how I started. I started with a little practice in Hong Kong, my little Reiki practice. And from that, I was still doing the yoga teacher training in Hong Kong. That was a year-long training. And as part of our exam, we had to compare the Bhagavad Gita, which is considered the Indian Bible, with a scripture of our choosing, whether that was contemporary or old. And I decided to compare that with the Tao Te Ching, which is obviously a well-known beautiful scripture. And one of my co-students compared it with Many Lives, Many Masters, a book by Dr. Brian Wise. And we didn't really have time to go into it at the time, but that title just stuck with me, Many Lives, Many Masters. And that voice, which I had then learned to listen to, told me, you need to read this book. And all I knew was that it had something to do with incarnation. And I wasn't even sure whether I believed in incarnation at the time.
Right.
As I said, that journey for me was very gradual. I now believed in energy healing, but I wasn't sure about incarnation. I thought maybe for some. And I got home, and this was Hong Kong, so I had to order it. I couldn't just find this in a bookshop.
Right.
Only 40 pages into the book, this voice, strong voice, came through and said, you need to become a past life regression therapist. So this book, very brief, I know, darling, I know that we are a little pressed for time, but I can't.
Oh, no, keep going. Okay. Okay.
So I have to tell you a little bit about this, otherwise it doesn't make any sense.
Yes, please tell us.
So this book is about a highly regarded professional psychiatrist. And at that time, we're talking about the 70s. At that time, it was all science and it was chemical. So people were prescribed pills, you know. Yeah, with a little bit of talk. What they did believe in already at the time was the power of hypnosis. So he would prescribe pills and he would do some hypnosis sessions. That was pretty much, at that moment, the approach of a psychotherapy and, of course, talk. And so he had a client that spontaneously in a hypnosis session regressed beyond her current life into other lifetimes where she had similar issues to the issues that were bothering her in her current life. And by exploring that scenario and clearing those issues in those other lifetimes, she instantaneously felt better in her current life. And some of these issues that they had been talking about for years literally were resolved within that session. And he couldn't believe it. And he spent another 4 years trying to give this some kind of scientific explanation of what was happening until eventually, because he knew if I come out with this in my professional field and telling my peers that I'm doing a past life regression, people would, you know, I would be ostracized. I would be ridiculed. That would be the end of my career. So that's why he was so hesitant, because he couldn't explain it in a scientific way until eventually he found the courage to bring it out in the open and said, look, I can no longer deny. And it's been one of the most effective therapies to date, certainly far more effective than what he had been doing thus far.
Right.
And this was the 70s. Instead of being ridiculed, instead of being ostracized and losing his job, other therapists came out of the woodworks and said, oh, thank God, someone is speaking about this. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so there had been a collective awakening, it seems, where people individually had started to regress people in hypnosis sessions to other lifetimes to really go to the root cause of deep trauma, of any issues that bother you in your current life. 40 pages into that book, he, the therapist himself, was still very much in his full skepticism, which with hindsight, I understand. I needed this book to be my introduction because I was carrying that same skepticism. Yet 40 pages in, this voice came in and told me, you need to become a past life regression therapist. And I literally went off into a state of being that I cannot consciously recall. But when I came out of it, I had signed up, I had enrolled into a training, a 1.5 year training with the most prestigious past life regression academy in the world, which involved me leaving the country and flying out to do my practicums without really having the finances for it at the time. But it was done. I came out of it and I had enrolled and I had no choice but to pursue this. And of course, ultimately, I now know that this was meant to be my journey, my path. But when you ask, how did she get to it? In this case, it wasn't my choice.
You were called upon.
Spirit took over and left me no choice. And ultimately, of course, I decided to go with it. I trusted it, right? And I fully dedicated myself to it. And now it's been, you know, to this day, and I've been doing this for a very long time, one of the most powerful therapies in my practice. I mean, they're all amazingly powerful, but this is, yeah, it's been such a magnificent and humbling journey to guide people to transform and release their trauma that may be felt and experienced in their current life, but ultimately has a root cause far beyond just this lifetime, you have experienced yourself.
I was just going to say, as I've experienced myself. Yeah. And I think, I think that's exactly the difference between working with a therapist in the regular therapist we think of
traditional sense
and working with a past life regression healer, because in our
therapists
as well, right?
Because you are your own healer, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think the difference is because you really get to go very, very deep in the subconsciousness and really dive into things that you normally don't spend time thinking about at all. And you're, you know, when you're guided by someone like yourself, you know, who can really take you on that path, like that journey of understanding, it really helps you come out. And, you know, and I've told you this before too, after I finish, I'm like, wow, I feel so calm. Like, you know, like there's this, you get this very immense, huge feeling when you finish. And then you think about all that we discuss in our session and it makes sense. And it gives you this new perspective on things you're dealing with in, as we said earlier, in this current lifetime. So I think that's, I would say that's like the difference between working with a traditional therapist and someone like yourself.
Yeah, I fully agree. Look, with a traditional therapy, and that's not to negate because it can be highly beneficial, but you will continue to talk about what you consciously recall. And in a way, you continue to perpetuate the cycle of that trauma because you keep recalling it.
Yes.
Here we go, under clinical hypnosis, we go back into your subconscious awareness, and not even back, we tap into your subconscious awareness that your conscious mind cannot access. So of course you have a whole new exploration of the root cause of the issue that is still energetically working itself out in your current life.
Right.
But true healing can only occur within your subconscious awareness, as science has proven that up to 95% of your thoughts and your beliefs and your actions are governed by your subconscious mind. So that is where we then have to go through to understand why you think, believe, or act the way you do.
Yes, yes,
and,
exactly.
Right? To empower you then to do it differently, we need to change that scenario and that belief in your, and that story in your subconscious awareness, so that your conscious awareness can then start to take that on as your truth as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that is where the most powerful healing and transformations occur. And very, very briefly, when it comes to my soul guidance, which is a channeling, which is not something that I could study for, it is something that manifested itself naturally after many years of having been on this journey, something that I pushed away for a very long time because it scared me. I didn't really know what to do with it. I didn't really know how I could use this to serve others, in what format, if you will. And then, as the universe does, it kept bringing that subject, that gift up in my life in many different ways.
Stop running away. Stop running away.
Absolutely. But I continue to be resistant to it. And I mean, you know, that in itself is a great story and journey. We don't have time for that today, maybe another time. But what I will say is that ultimately, I ended up going to Peru to work with a team of shamans myself, as I wanted to. At that moment, I had a few challenges in my life, and I really wanted to come back, you know, to that space of true connection where I knew I could be. And in this case, I chose to do that, in a shamanic way, with different ceremonies. And when I came back from that journey back to Bali, because I had already moved to Bali by that time, been there for several years, the moments of certainly not coincidences that brought that gift or magnified that gift were so poignant that I could no longer deny it. Let's put it that way. That's the very, very short version. And eventually I had to find that courage to bring that service to the world. Took me a little while to figure out how, and what allowed me to fully embrace it. And it's, you know, one of the most popular services that I offer, healing therapies that I offer today, is that I got out of my own way.
Right.
And this is a really important aspect, I think, for anyone, allowing that beautiful divine inspiration and your divine gifts to flow through you, trusting that by doing so, you are serving your highest and especially others' highest good without thinking, in this case, as Esther, oh my goodness, will I be good enough? You know, oh, what a responsibility this is to channel for people that I've never met. I don't know anything about them. They ask me the most personal questions, right? And oh my God, what if I get it wrong? You know, those thoughts were all little ego Esther worrying about me, really, whether I was good enough in this service. And ultimately, you know, as a very strong reminder, that voice came through and it said, it is not about you. This is about you allowing these divine, you know, gifts, this source to flow through you so that others can experience what it feels like to connect with their soul essence as well, to their unconditional love, to their unconditional joy, to their abundance, to their empowerment, to their inspiration. And so once I was able to do that, took me a day or two, then things started flowing and I lost my hesitation, if you will, or trepidation, and I just went for it wholeheartedly, and I haven't looked back since. It's been such an amazing and humbling service.
Well, that's a great way to kind of lead us to wrapping up, Esther, because then I just want to say, what would you tell those who are listening and feel like they too have this you know, spiritual calling. And, but they're, you know, but they are in this earthly bound scenario, whether it's they're in, you know, relationships, or they have responsibilities and they have these jobs and they have mortgages to pay. What would you say to encourage them to not shut that noise off, you know, to find their soul purpose? So we, as we said earlier in the conversation, to really just know that when you fully listen to that inner voice, and that intuition, and you go with it, that the vibrations, the energies, all that will align, you know, and to have that courage to do that, right? Because there are a lot of people who don't. And I know we keep saying vibration and energy, and some people might be listening and going, we have no idea what that means, you know, or, you know, in terms of really understanding. And it's like what you said earlier, it's not, for some, because you had a very powerful experience, it was a one-time overnight waking up and having this very strong a feeling that you had. But for others, I think I could say for myself, it was over, you know, several years of practice. And, you know, like it was a slow process, but as you keep practicing, you know, and those who practice yoga, we often say this, right? You keep practicing daily. And whether it's in your lifestyle or, you know, always getting on the mat, but you eventually do feel that alignment and that energetic vibration. And you start seeing it when you're interacting with people and how things around you shift. But it might not be some, it might be faster, some it might be slower. But if you stick to it, you will see that it changes.
Absolutely. And even though I had that major pivotal moment that allowed me at that moment to feel better about my circumstances and not be in utter despair. Mind you, the journey since has been one of additional expansion and growth, exactly as you described, right?
I like to also say lately, like there's no cheat sheet to how you get there, right? Like there's no like shortcut. No one has shortcuts.
No.
Even with social media, even with all the, you know, fancy technology we have to market, you know, and position things. And now because we're in an environment where all this conversation is slowly becoming more commercialized, right? Healing, you know, self-care, you know, all that, all those jargons. But the essence is work. There's no cheating. You can't jump it.
Absolutely. And it's great that you mentioned that, because ultimately, yes, we're talking about energy and how you feel vibrationally, but there is no segregation between this earthbound experience and the spiritual one. It is one, ultimately, right? We are spiritual beings having an earthbound experience.
Human experience, yeah.
Yes, a human experience. I think the most courageous journey is where you attend to everything that you attend to on a daily basis, whether that is pertaining to your children as a mom, your job, your career, and at the same time, staying connected to what. And I said it before, but I will say it again, because I think it's so important. What lights up your soul? What brings you true meaning? And so when it comes to answering your question as to what advice or how would you, what can you say to people that feel maybe confused or disempowered in merging those two. For me, in my experience, it very much comes down to believing in yourself, to find the courage to at any time stand in your truth. And that means expressing your passions, expressing your loves, expressing your interests, your inspirations, and then allowing that, regardless of the outer circumstances, right? Regardless of family's expectations or societal expectations, finding that belief and that worthiness, of you allowing yourself to live a life that feels aligned, that feels meaningful, that feels joyful, that feels alive, that feels inspired, and to then connect within, because it ultimately is an internal journey, and start trusting that inner guidance, that soul guidance that is there for you at any time, and to allow that to be your main motivation in how you think, what you believe, how you ultimately act, what you create and choose to manifest, knowing that you are deserving of the very best, and to no longer buy into any self-defeating stories or beliefs, whether they were cultivated by you or imposed by others. And so what is the most important thing, I think, for all of us is that we work on releasing and transforming any trauma.
Yeah.
That we are still holding on to, whether that is from our childhood or subsequently, that makes us in some way believe that we may not be worthy, or that we may not be enough, that we may not be good enough.
Yeah.
And once we start releasing and transforming that, which I do in all of my sessions, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. it nurtures that foundation of that courage, of that worthiness, of that empowerment, of that abundance within. And once those energies, those frequencies rise, you then can connect. And that's often subconsciously with new opportunities, with new connections, with new ideas and inspirations that are now an energetic match to this new frequency of abundance, of worthiness, of empowerment that prior could not even flow into your life because you were still stuck, if you will, in the stories.
Yes.
That were, yeah, often yeah. imprinted from early childhood, or as we discussed prior, potential themes that you might have been working on through many different lifetimes. And once we transform and release those and bring you back to remembering your truth and whom you are at your soul essence, and instill the courage to embrace and exploring that, oh girl, there is no stopping you. And I speak from experience and from all the clients come out of my sessions, literally being a different person because they could release anything that does no longer serve them on their journeys forward.
Yeah. I think I like that last wording you had in there, instilling the confidence to embrace it. I think that's very, very key in really basically just for everyone to apply, to really just, as they say, always go with the flow, right? It's almost kind of the same concept. But I think adding that element of embracing the confidence, I think that's key. The word confidence, right? So I think that really is a great way for us to wrap up this beautiful conversation. Thank you for your time. I'm going to add all your links below. So if anyone who is listening is interested in reaching out to you for a session, we'll give them a little Karito discount along with that. And I highly encourage everyone who's interested or open to the idea to sign up for the session with you.
Yes,
start with the soul guidance and see how you like that. And then if depending on everyone's where they're
it all
at.
Depends on where they are on their journey, what issues they have. All my therapies cater specifically for whatever is going on or what you want to heal or transform. It'd be an absolute pleasure and honor to serve these beautiful souls on their journey, for sure.
Yeah, I do want to leave you with a thought. I think you can start planning on writing a book.
You're not the first one to suggest that.
Okay, well, I just want to put it out there again. Thank you so much for your time, Esther.
Thank you so much.
We'll speak soon.
That's all we have time for today. Thank you for listening to Curito Connects. For more Connects content, collaborations, and discoveries set to inspire you on your own individual journey, please head to our website at www.curito.co. Until next time, stay inspired, and thank you for joining us at Curito Connects.